You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
To come and save her, let her believe it, get on her knees and pray her, then pray her, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good, and it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when to turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our conversation today. I am absolutely delighted to welcome our guest today. She's someone who we love very much and appreciate incredibly. And I'm honored that she's here with us today. Would you please introduce yourself to our friends who are listening?
Yes, thanks so much for having me. I'm Bethany Johnson. I'm the owner and founder of Bold and Bright Academy and Bold and Bright Academy Online. I'm an early childhood educator, a parent, and I'm really excited to be here to speak about this with you today. This is something I'm really passionate about, so thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Today we're talking about better than beating, and we're going to help our friends who are parents, grandparents, caregivers, educators, to find a better path to correcting and disciplining our children. So first of all, what does correction and discipline actually mean to you?
Teaching them the right way to do things. It means giving them, empowering them with the skills to make better choices, to realize that that's of growing and maturing and making better choices next time. It means connecting over correcting. We need that connection with our caregivers to be able to grow and learn from them. So I think connection over correction is really, I'm not looking at a punishment or discipline as a fear-based tactic. When we think of discipline, we think of discipleship, teaching. We are their teachers. When you're teaching, you want that to be done from a place of love, safety.
I listened to your description. It's beautiful. It's helpful. It's edifying. And then I see what folks are doing, especially in the Bible Belt and in some particular religious affiliations. And I think, how did we get so far off course?
I think, corporal punishment has forever been a thing, especially in, I think, many religions. It kind of became a very mainstream thing with evangelicals and Christianity in general, with James Dobson. He wrote books like The Strong-Willed Child and had to pretty much, he wrote parenting books and taught them how to discipline their kids, and that involved a lot of corporal punishment. I think he saw it as a way to, that we need to train our kids to, like, kind of like, in fact, he correlates it to training a dog.
Wow.
A lot of fear-based strategies, and I think one of the ways that he is able to kind of get parents on board with that is the notion that, your child is inherently sinful and it is your job to keep them, on the straight and narrow or out of hell, or, raise kids who will follow in the footsteps of his teachings. And his way of doing that is to physically train them out of a sinful spirit. I think that's where it kind of, the more mainstream originates, and that's what we grew up with. It was also a different time back then. We didn't have the access to the internet where we could go and just in a second research childhood development studies, and so we were kind of relying on people that we trusted and were leaders in our faith, and if they told us that this is the way to raise godly kids, then that's what we were going to do, because they want the best for us, And I believe that about my parents. They wanted the best for us. We grew up with spankings. There were many wooden spoons broken on one of the six kids' bottoms. But I also know that they loved me with all they had. They loved me just as much as I love my son. And this was what they thought was right. And I think that's how, you know, it's not, parents weren't taught this because they wanted, parents wanted a way to hurt their kids. They wanted a way to discipline their kids, and they were taught that physically harming them was the way to teach them to do better.
Wow, well, there's so many layers, too, because when people honestly love their children, they want to do the right thing, and then someone that they trust says, this is the right thing, and it all just falls apart. So why, okay, this should seem obvious to many of us, but why isn't this the right way? Like, what's the harm in treating our children this way?
Ooh, okay, that's a big question. So, I mean, there's a lot of places to go with this. Let's start with, there's been a lot of studies on the effects of spanking and corporal punishment on kids' brains. But when we think about even, you know, attachment styles, we're looking for a secure attachment. We know that that's the healthiest attachment style, and that's going to describe how a child or adult feels comforted and protected by their caregiver or loved one. And we know how important a secure attachment is with at least one of our attachment figures, who's usually the parent or whoever is our main caregiver. So just imagine how that secure attachment is affected when the person who is supposed to love you the most in the world, the person who you are supposed to feel safe with, they're supposed to be your secure base. That, you know, sets the basis for your entire relation history going forward, you know, future rather. And then when we think about how that could be affected by when you mess up as a kid, when you make a mistake, when you anger your parent, when you're physically hurt by them. So that safe space, that secure base becomes something that is not safe and secure anymore. It becomes something that leads you to not being able to make mistakes without being physically harmed. And just how scary that is as a kid when, you know, a lot of things are scary. You haven't experienced everything in life. You know, you're there, you're learning every day as you go. You're learning new things. You're not in full control of your brain and your body. You know, our prefrontal cortexes aren't developed until 25, you know, and has a lot to do with decision-making, social skills, conscious thought, attention, emotional and behavioral control. So if that part of our brain is not developed until we're 25, and our parents' role is to help us develop that, but every time we fall short of being what their version of developed is, we're physically harmed, then that's not creating a very secure attachment with our caregiver. And the consequences of not having a secure attachment is going into your adult life not being securely attached, which really affects your relationships with other adults and with your own kids. So that, I think that's one of them, is you're not their safe space. And that when you don't have that safe space as a kid with your attachment figure, that causes a lot of harm. But even just looking at a study that Harvard did, they took about 150 kids. Some had been spanked and some had not been, and they put them in an MRI machine. They wanted to see the potential differences in their brain. So using this MRI assessment, they saw the changes in brain responses when the children viewed a series of images featuring, like, facial expressions or emotional responses, things like frowns and smiles. So they showed them these pictures, simple pictures, and they found that children who had been spanked had a higher activity response in the areas of their brain that regulate these emotional responses and detect threat. So even to facial expressions that most were considered non-threatening, that part of their brain was responding a lot more than kids who were not spanked. So their threat response right away, their threat response is up. When you go through childhood and your threat response or your fight or flight is activated all the time because you're not sure when you may be physically harmed by your caregiver, you know, that has a lot of consequences. That's a huge time when your neurotransmitters are making connections and being in fight or flight for your childhood gives you a dysregulated nervous system, which goes way beyond just childhood. You know, after receiving lots of therapy, I realized that my nervous system has been in fight or flight for most of my life, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm one of those people who, if you would have asked me, I would have said, no, I don't agree with spanking. I would never spank my own kid, but I don't think it had, you know, I don't feel particular trauma about it. You know, I have those memories and they weren't great memories, but you know, I know that my parents love me. But as I was reading these studies, you know, and they're describing that preschool and school age kids and even adults who have been spanked are more likely to develop anxiety and depression disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And they have more difficulty positively engaging in schools and self-regulation. So, and I have had anxiety for a long, long time. So, you know, we don't, I don't know how much is attributed to spanking and just my brain in general, but I think it may have affected me in ways that I don't even realize or understand. And so just having that fight or flight response activated from such an early age, it has a lot of negative consequences on your body, you know, but also your mental health.
Right. Well, first of all, I want to say I'm very sorry that that happened to you. I'm sorry that someone treated you like that. And I know they loved you and they didn't know better, but I'm still sorry that that happened to you and so many of our friends who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to ask this question though, because what do we do? Right? I think some things are default settings. Like we grow up with people who do this and it's in us. I can't tell you how many people in the area of the country where I live have little plaques that say, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, or, you know, or if you ask them, they'll say, well, if you don't beat them, the police will. What? So they're going to be criminals? They say things like, and then the number one answer, I turned out fine. You did.
Right, yeah.
You did. You did. We didn't say you didn't turn out fine. We just said maybe there's a better path for your children and grandchildren, right?
Yeah.
And so
absolutely. Yeah.
I really want us to get some healing and some wisdom into this situation, because I think people don't have tools. Like when you know better, you do better, right?
Exactly.
And so.
And that's what I say. Like I don't want. I don't want this to be a shame conversation.
That's right.
Because there's that doesn't help anyone, and none of us are perfect. And when we know better, we can do better. So that's why I was so excited to come on and talk about this, because so many of us don't know better. And I didn't know better, like the reasons against it. I just knew that it is not in my, the thought of ever spanking my little guy, I just can't even comprehend it. You know what I mean?
I do.
But I also have been through a lot of therapy. I've learned so much about myself. I've learned about how my childhood affected me. I learned about giving grace to my parents because they were doing the best they could. And giving grace to myself because I'm doing the best I can, you know? But all we can do is learn and change as we go, as we grow. So I really want this to be like, I love that you're making this an open space. Like there is no shame here for what we, any of us have done in the past, you know? So some of the things that I think one of the biggest ways that we can start to change this dynamic is to educate ourselves on childhood development, you know, because so much of what is taught in James Dobson and with the corporal punishment and spare the rod and spoil the child is not, we didn't have all these studies about how child's brain develops. A child's brain develops slowly. Different parts of the brain develop at different speeds, you know, and what we used to see as rebellion, as
intentional disobedience,
exactly, is not always the case. In fact, a lot of the times it's not. And it's our job to help them regulate and understand the consequences, give those natural consequences, hold those boundaries, set boundaries and hold them. Because we also know that this is not a free-for-all. You know, this is not a permissive parent. You know, I also see a lot of parents who who are advocates of spanking, you know, they're like, oh, all these gentle parenting.
Yes.
I think permissive and authoritative also often get mixed up. And that's also, I do not want to promote a permissive parenting style, because kids need boundaries and they need that to feel safe, you know. And if they don't have that, they're going to be acting out in different ways to try and get those boundaries. So I think that's also a big thing, is educating ourselves on how their brains work, why they're acting the way they are, not seeing it as a personal attack, seeing it as, what skill do they need to learn? What skill do I need to teach them in this moment? Instead mm-hmm. of how can I punish them for mm-hmm. for these behaviors, what skills are they lacking so that these behaviors are different next time, so they can handle this situation differently next time? So I think focusing on skill building instead of punishment is another big one, which goes right along with child development. Because if you're understanding why the behavior is that way, you're going to be able to act more accordingly.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the difference again between discipline and punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, discipline, we think of disciples, we think of discipleship, which is teaching, right? We're there mm-hmm. to teach our kids. Mm-hmm. Punishment is more there to try and scare them almost to not do it again, or show them if you do this, then this will happen. But it doesn't teach them the skills to handle it differently next time. Mm-hmm. It teaches them to probably lie about it to not get caught.
Right. is, sure. Yeah.
That was a lot of what we did. It wasn't so much of, I didn't know how to handle it better, but I learned how to not get caught. You know, I didn't have the tools to regulate myself or to get myself out of a bad situation instead of going along with it. Like I didn't have those tools. I just had the, if I get caught, then I'm going to get in trouble, which led me to not mm-hmm. having a very honest relationship with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we think of discipline versus punishment, it really is about teaching them the skills they need to handle these situations better next time. Because, mm-hmm. you know, as a kid, as an adult, we all get ourselves into precarious situations. And if we don't have the self-advocacy to get ourselves out of it, if we don't have the confidence in ourselves to be able to trust ourselves to handle the situation, we're going to fall into that, you know, peer pressure and I'm bad anyway, so it doesn't matter, you know, and it just leads to all these negative, you know, self thoughts that aren't empowering us to take the situation into our own hands and make the correct decision, because we don't have the tools to make that the correct decision. We just have the fear of getting caught.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, this will help. And sometimes it will help in the moment. And parents will say, well, yeah, I mean, I hit my kid and they know not to act that way now. They know if I don't hit them, then they're not going to know. They're not going to know to respect them, the parents, or to respect their elders.
Mm, uh-huh.
But I mean, it doesn't, that's not what it teaches them. It just teaches them to fear, you know, and fear, you know, they say the opposite of love is not hate, it's fear. And I think that comes into play so much with this, because the parents are fearing that their kids will turn out terribly if they don't discipline or punish them. You know, they're fearing that they won't be God-fearing, you know, like so much of it is based out of fear instead of love, when really what they want is love. You know, we all love our kids. So to be able to discipline them in a place of love and not fear, we need to be able to understand, one, that they're humans, you know, they are human beings. They may be still developing, but they still deserve our empathy and respect. And like, I wouldn't hit my dog. I wouldn't hit another adult, a coworker, a boss. I wouldn't hit, you know, how are we teaching them that you can't hit others, and if you do, you're going to get hit, you know? Like, it just doesn't solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It doesn't teach them the skills they need to learn from any of the situations that they may get themselves in.
And then you're back to this one thing, too. You haven't solved the problem. You also haven't taught them anything. You haven't taught mm-hmm. them any useful life skills. Just duck,
exactly.
I guess. You know, and
exactly.
Yikes. Well, wow. I'm really impressed with what you're saying, and I'm grateful for it. because I feel like we have very loud voices saying the opposite. We have loud voices saying, you've got to do it. You just, you know. And what about the language we use about our children? Bad, wild, out of control, spoiled.
Yeah.
You notice how much of it's negative?
Strong-willed.
Yeah.
Strong-willed is a big one. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of this is meant to, and I mean, James Dawson talks about this in his books, a lot of it is meant to break their will, you know, to that if I can kind of beat them into submission enough, then they'll be good, you know, they'll be easy, you know. And it's funny, like I said, there's six kids in my family, and the oldest was, we used to joke, he was a perfect child, you know, he was an easy child. He wasn't getting into trouble. He, and then there's me and my brother, and we were not the easy kids. You know, I was a strong-willed child. I was the adventurous one. I didn't have the executive functioning skills to have, you know, control my body. And my mom just said it was very hard to parent me because she was always worried I was going to kill myself, you know, because I was, I just didn't have the executive function to keep myself safe, you know. And I, absolutely, as a preschool teacher, I absolutely understand that. Like, there are kids who are easier and kids who are harder, you know, to in different ways. And but the thing is that even the kids that are easier, when they're grown up, told like, oh, you're easy, oh, you get along great with the adults, oh, you're a joy to have around, you know, that gives them a different sort of complex, you know, because it's kind of putting them above where they actually are developmentally, you know, putting expectations on them that may not be fair to them. And then on the flip side, it teaches the, you know, the hard kids, the strong-willed kids, that they're just, they're hard. They're not easy, and they're bad. You know, they're not good inside. They're inherently will, you know, strong-willed and bad and what's the word? Rebellious and, you know, all these words that we use for kids who are a little more strong-willed, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's been, it has a negative connotation, but, you know, we want our kids to be able to question things and even authority, you know, because we sure know that just because someone is in a position of authority doesn't mean that they're right. You know what I mean? We want to be able to raise kids who can think critically, who can question when they don't agree with something, who can stand up for kids. And when you kind of beat that out of them, or you praise the easy kids who don't question and who just go along, it really leads to a lot of difficulties in their adult life, you know. And I also think it's important that when you are taught that love looks like physical punishment, because in James Dobson's book, you know, he says you spank them and you tell them how much you love them and that you're doing this because you love them. That really sets you up. What kind of relationships in adulthood does that set you up for when the way you view love is through physical harm? Like that, it kind of breeds abuse, you know, because that's what you view love as. Oh, well, they're hurting me, but it's because they love me. You know, it's because I messed up. I did this to deserve this physical harm. So if the people that your very first teachers, the people who love you most in the world, teach you that love looks like being hurt when you mess up, then you're going to find those kind of relationships in your adult life. And then that's how these cycles of abuse continue, because you find someone like that, you have kids, and you pass it on to your kids. You don't know any better. And then it just keeps getting passed on until hopefully someone is able to, you know, learn better, go to therapy, learn about themselves, teach others, you know, and spread that this isn't the way to do it anymore.
Yes. Well, it's very hard work to go through life believing that something is wrong with you all the time. Right? Even when you don't quite know what it is. Like, you think you're acting like a normal person, you think, and yet everyone around you is now yelling and, you know, upset with you just for behaving, you know, like you think you should behave. And that's hard work. And I was one of those easy children. And people pray, you know, company baby, oh, she's just lovely. Oh, she's just so easy to raise, you know. And the danger of that, too, is that then you don't have an authentic self. Like, you know, I need something, or all kinds of things were happening to me and in my life, and all kinds of things, and you don't say anything because you don't want to rock the boat, or because your brother is the difficult child and everyone has their hands full with him, then mm-hmm. you just come home yep. from school and you're quiet. And so you learn yep. to suppress a lot of things because that becomes part of your identity. I'm easy to get along with. I'm easy to love. I'm not difficult. And if I were to say this or this, I would be difficult. So, you know, we don't want to get on in a ditch on either side. You know, we want everybody to have the wholeness and soundness and healing that they need.
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees. They pray hard, and never look back. What's the world forgave you?
TalkTainmentRadio.com podcast is another way to go for those of you that's on the go. You can now get your favorite programs on most new cell phone technology. Let us work like a DVR and enjoy our podcast for those shows you can't fit in your busy schedule. The Road to Featured Podcast. Type in TalkTainmentRadio.com. Go to homepage, scroll down to Featured Podcast, click on Play, or click on Subscribe for more programs. Or you have the option to download. Podcast is the way to go for you busy folks. The world's greatest radio. TalkTainmentRadio.com. Another reason to come, another reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard.
The COVID-19 vaccines can be our chance to get back to our plans, who we are, what we miss, to get back to each other, to life. But it's okay to have questions like, how were the vaccines tested? In rigorous clinical trials among adults of diverse backgrounds. Can the vaccines give you COVID-19? You cannot get COVID-19 from a vaccine. Why should I get vaccinated? Protecting yourself also helps protect the people around you. Find the latest information at getvaccineanswers.org.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring. It's volunteering in your community. It's shoveling a neighbor's snow or cutting an elderly person's grass for them or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. Brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at commemorativeairforce.org right now.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something, serious. I know you love me. I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
I can't believe he found them.
He seems sorry.
We very clearly told him not to look up there.
I'm honestly impressed that he was able to do it.
Right? What did he balance on that big chair?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he'll just know what his gifts are this year.
I really thought we had hidden them well.
If they can find their presents, they can find a gun.
911, what is your emergency?
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns. Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
Okay, well, the question I'm going to ask now is, what if you really do have a challenging child? Because things go in seasons. They go in phases.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah. You might have a dream child. I mean, I had a unicorn child. Like, he slept through mm-hmm. the night in the hospital in labor and delivery, you know, and people are like, wow, he's just been a joy, really, to raise and wonderful. But I acknowledge that he gets to be a normal person, and so he's going to have days when, you know, he's going to be more challenging than others. And what hurts me is when I see parents take what might be a season, you know, while they're learning to do something or going through a challenge or having a hard time with something, and make it a label, you know.
Yeah.
Around here, people say a bad little boy. Like, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, she got a bad little boy. And I'm like, she just has a little boy. That's all I see. Who's tired right now or hungry or thirsty or doesn't want to sit still in church anymore, you know.
Exactly.
You know, so
the words we use to our kids, mm-hmm. the words we use about them to them, the words that they hear about them becomes their inner voice. That is how they will feel about themselves. If that's the people that know them the most and love them the most, mm-hmm. that's what they're saying about them. That's what they're going to believe about them. And that's why, you know, that's why you felt that, you know, I need to continue being easy because that's how I'm loved. They love me when I'm easy. Just how mm-hmm. I felt. I'm a bad kid. I'm hard. You know, I'm bad at heart. You know, like, that becomes their inner monologue, and then that takes a lot of work to undo as an adult. Still working mm-hmm. on it. But what you said about the, you know, the phases, that really resonates with me, because Silas, my little boy, is also, he's been such a joyful, easy, you know, one of those babies. He's just very easy. And as he became three, he's three now, it's definitely gotten more challenging, I would say. We've seen, you know, the tantrums, we've seen the testing boundaries, you know, that type of stuff. And every time he has a bad day, my first thought in my head is, oh no, is this forever? Is this you? You know, I immediately go to like, no, right, you know.
Yeah.
And not even, you know, just having to remember that, like, he's allowed to have a bad day. I have bad days all the time, you know, like, why can we not give these kids who are so brand new. Why can't we extend the same amount of grace to them that we would want to extend to us who have, you know, I've had 36 years to figure out myself on this earth, and I still have bad days, and I still have problems regulating, and I still have problems being kind and polite to, you know, like, why can't we extend that same grace to them? Mm-hmm. And so I think just remembering that they're humans, and they deserve our grace just like we do is a huge thing with this. Mm-hmm. I also think that learning to regulate our own bodies, because, you know, we all have triggers from childhood, whether it's a noisy house, you know, whether it's a dirty house because we used to get in trouble if we were too noisy or too dirty or mm-hmm. whatever it is that just growing your family, mm-hmm. these are normal things that you need to adjust to. You know, I'm much messier than my husband, who his family was very neat and a clean freak, almost to the point where it caused him a little issues with that, you know, and my family was, there was eight of us, and it was just a disaster all the time. And we were all home all the time. And, you know, our house was just messy. You know, it was very lived in. There was a lot of people. So coming into this relationship together, just with me and my husband, it was hard to understand where we were coming from our lived experiences, and that it didn't mean that it wasn't a malicious thing. You know, that took a lot of learning on each other's part. And we need to give ourselves grace as we go through all these changes in parenthood, because they are going to bring up your triggers. Like, nothing will bring out wounds and your triggers and your insecurities and your fears like being a parent, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I really stand by that, because you are anything that's still hurting you from your past will come out full force once you become a parent. So if we don't learn to find our own triggers and deal with them in a responsible manner, then we are not going to be the regulated, calm person that our child needs to figure out how to regulate themselves, you know? So a lot of times if our kids are freaking out, they're having a meltdown, a tantrum, we get so triggered in our body.
Yeah.
Like, it makes me anxious, it makes me nervous, or if we're in public, I'm embarrassed, I have to put on a certain show so people don't think I'm just letting them run free.
Uh-huh.
And so we may, you know, then we're kind of acting outside of our values. And so I think realizing those triggers in ourselves, is it shame? Do we feel ashamed if our kid has a totally developmentally appropriate tantrum in the middle of Walmart? Does that make us feel shame? Okay, yeah, I am embarrassed. Okay, but is that my kid's fault? That's not my kid's fault. That's my problem. And I don't need to take that out on them. I need to stand by my values. I know I may not know exactly why they're tantruming, but it's been a long day. They're probably hungry. I can feel empathy for what they're feeling and the fact that they have no control in their body right now. You know, their thinking brain is not online. And so just, you know, that goes with learning childhood development, learning that when they're in those dysregulated states, their thinking brains are not in control. So trying to reason with them, trying to punish them, trying to anything while they're dysregulated is not going to sink in. So then we're kind of just pushing the dysregulation further, we're broadening the divide of, you know, the secure attachment divide, and we're not helping anyone. And then we're probably going to end up feeling guilty afterwards about how we handled it.
That's right.
I think one of the biggest things is learning to regulate ourselves, because they need, kids regulate by co-regulating. They don't regulate by getting sent off to the room alone when they're upset. They regulate by having a regulated presence with them, you know, so they can start to feel safe. And that's been because Silas didn't really have tantrums until he was about three. It has taken me, you know, I've had to navigate, okay, me staying regulated, and I feel like I do pretty good at that now, but what does he need from me? So I'll ask him, he'll be freaking out, and I'll say, you know, do you need space? Do you need me close? Do you need a hug? And half the time he says, you know, do you need space? Like, no. Okay, I'll sit here. Do you need a hug? No. Okay, I'm just going to sit here then and be with you. I think one of the, and I got this from Dr. Becky, and it's really, I was very surprised at how well it worked, by saying, I'm not scared. Your big feelings don't scare me. I'm here with you. You know, because their big feelings scare them. Like, that's scary for them when their body is out of control.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really scary. And if they see that you can't handle their big feelings, if they see that you're overwhelmed by what's going on in their body and you can't handle it and you can't keep it together, then they're not going to be able to keep it together either. And that's just going to make them more scared. So that's one of the biggest things, is learning how to regulate your own body. And then you learn as you go what they need to regulate themselves. And after a while, usually, you know, me just kind of being in the vicinity, he'll come up and just collapse in my arms and give me a hug. And then I could tell, like, I could see the click in his brain where his kind of thinking brain comes back online and he's not in that fight or flight. And we're able to kind of regulate together. And that's when the learning can happen, you know. And sometimes I'll let it go. And in bed, when I put him to bed, I'll say, you know, that was really hard today. Like, what were we feeling back? You know, you hit you hit mommy, and I saw you were having such a hard time. And what can we, you know, how can we fix it? How can we do better next time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think the other big thing is repairing and apologizing when we mess up.
Yeah.
You know, because even as an adult now and with my adult parents, you know, my mom, it's been hard, but I've been able to talk to my mom about a lot of this and about my childhood wounds, you know, and also tell her, you know, you were doing the best you could and I know you love me, but this really hurt me. And she is able to listen and apologize and understand, you know, whereas with my dad, when I bring that up, it's very much he's not able to mm-hmm. make that repair. You know, it's very much like, well, I must have been the worst, right? You know, and it's very, it's just such a stark difference. So if I'm practicing right now, because I never really heard that when I was little.
Right.
I never heard I'm sorry.
Right.
Like that.
Right.
That was my fault. That wasn't yours. And I acted the way, you know, in a way that is not okay. And I do that all the time with Silas. Whenever I even take little things that, you know, weren't these big, huge mess ups, but little things that I was like, hey, sorry, bud, I was really frustrated. I shouldn't have spoken that way. And will you forgive me, you know? And he does the same now. Like, he'll come back after a big tantrum, after he's regulated, and he'll go, I'm sorry, mommy. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And I of course I forgive you, bud, you know, and we can move on and we can learn from it.
Absolutely. Every night when we say our prayers before we go to bed, I apologize to my child.
Mm-hmm.
I do. Whether anything happened or not, it doesn't matter. I just do.
Yeah.
There was something about today that you didn't like. And then if something really did happen, I definitely do. And I want to apologize to you. I didn't do it, but I'm sorry that things happened to you, Miss Bethany. And I apologize that you had to go through things that were hurtful to you. And I think sometimes it doesn't matter who apologizes as long as somebody does. I know I'll never get an apology for certain things. I just won't. But there have been many people in my life who've reached out to me and loved me and shown me, you know, and I'm saying it for all of us who've been wounded or been hurt. You know, I'm so sorry that all of us went through that. We deserved better. But here's the wonderful thing. Our children do too. And we can do something different. Just because you saw it, just because it was done to you, just because you read it in a book, just because a preacher preached it, just because your religion says so, just because whatever, if it's not working for you and it's not building the life and the children that you want, you can do something different, can't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, giving my parents credit, my father's father was, you know, committed a lot worse abuse than, you know, spanking us. So every generation, we're getting a little better. You know, we're learning the tools. Like, my father did not do what his father did to us, you know. And I'm so thankful for that, you know. And I really do believe that they were doing the best with the tools they had. So now we have the internet, we have podcasts, we have resources. And we can learn and to do better. But let me tell you, it's hard work. It is the hardest thing in the world to remain calm when you have a child who is freaking out and you don't know why and you're exhausted and you're overstimulated. It takes every ounce of sanity, of will to be what your kid needs in that moment.
But
it's the most, also the most important thing in the world.
And you know, in every situation, you have to be somebody's hero. Somebody has to be the hero. And so it's our turn to be cycle breakers.
Yep.
It's our turn to be heroes. Otherwise, we just have more of the same, right? And our grandkids are in jeopardy. So we're going to do the work, you know?
Yeah.
We're going to do the work, and we'll get it. we will better than we had it. And our children will do the work, and they will move forward, and their children will move forward. And in Indigenous culture, every decision we make, we have to consider the seventh generation. And so when, you know, that's why we're having this conversation today, because I'm thinking about the seventh generation. I want my children's children and their children's children to have it better and to walk in a better way. You are a brave and courageous person. I thank you so much for having this conversation with me today. I'm just in awe, and I admire you so much. And I know you are doing some great things in the lives of early learners, and I want to make sure that we promote your learning program. Tell us how we can perhaps enroll our children in Bold and Bright Academy online or find more about what you're doing.
Absolutely, yeah. You can check out our program at boldandbrightacademyonline.com. We're also on Facebook at Bold and Bright Academy. We're on Instagram at Bold and Bright Academy. YouTube has clips from my classes. TikTok, Bold and Bright LV. So we're all over the place. And I would love to have all of you and your listeners. And now we have a new class by Dr. Dawn.
Yay!
Social Emotional Learning class from Dr. Dawn. So we're just adding classes. We just started our new fall semester, and we're meeting new friends, and it's been amazing, and we would all love to have you. Can I also give a couple of book suggestions for parents who are looking for...
Please, yes.
So some of the ones that really helped me were How to Talk So Little Kids Will Listen. If you have older kids, teenagers, middle school, they have How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. I've read both of them. They're amazing. Also, The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read and Your Children Will Be Glad That You Did. That was another great one. Dr. Becky's Good Inside. Another great one. I think those are my big three right now. If you really, The Whole Brain Child. The Whole Brain Child is also another great one, and all of Dan Siegel's stuff. But yeah, those books really kind of got me on my journey to really understanding why I'm trying to live this way. I knew it felt right, but they gave you the tools and the research to back it up.
Beautiful, beyond beautiful. Well, I know you need to teach and shape the lives of our beloved early learners, but I thank you for taking some time to visit with us and to help us to break cycles and find something better than beating.
Yes, better than beating. Thank you so much, Dr. Dawn. This was such a great discussion, and I always love talking to you.
We love you very much, and we appreciate you. We thank you. And our friends, please, please follow Miss Bethany. Please get these books. Please. Your children will thank you. Your grandchildren will thank you. And the blessing of it will be your great-grandchildren won't know any different, because they'll think something wonderful has always been that way.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you, Miss Bethany.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Take care.
Hello, my sweethearts. My name is Dr. Dawn, and I'm so happy that you've joined me for story time today. We have some amazing books that celebrate you. Yes, your birthday? Oh, what a special day. The day you were born is sacred and special to all of us. And there are other days that are special too. If you're adopted, that day is a very special day to your whole family. If you're like me and come from a culture where you have naming ceremonies and you're given a name, that is a very magnificent day, a day that we all look forward to celebrating you. Maybe there are other days that we celebrate you in school, your first day of school, or your first day of a certain activity. Maybe you win awards in that activity and we celebrate you then. Maybe we just celebrate you because you are, and we love you. And you are so very precious and special to us. On the day you were born, Deborah Fraser. Oh, on the eve of your birth, word of your coming passed from animal to animal. The reindeer told the Arctic terns, who told the humpback whales, who told the Pacific salmon, who told the monarch butterflies, who told the green turtles, who told the European eel, who told the busy garden warblers, and the marvelous news migrated world. While you waited in darkness, Tiny's knees curled to your chin. The earth and her creatures with the sun and the moon all moved in their places, each ready to greet you. The very first moment of the very first day you arrived. On the day you were born, the round planet Earth turned toward your morning sky, whirling past darkness, spinning the night into light. On the day you were born, gravity's strong pull held you to the Earth with the promise that you would never float away. While deep in space, the burning sun sent up towering flames, lighting your sky from dawn until dusk. On the day you were born, the quiet moon glowed and offered to bring a full bright face each month to your windowsill. While high above the North Pole, Polaris, the glittering North Star, stood still, shining silver light into your night sky. On the day you were born, the moon pulled on the ocean below, and wave by wave, a rising tide washed the beaches clean for your footprints. While far out at sea, clouds swelled with water drops, sailed to shore on a wind, and rained you a welcome across Earth's green land. On the day you were born, a forest of tall trees collected the sun's light in their leaves, where in silent mystery they made oxygen for you to breathe. While close to your skin and as high as the sky, air rushed in and blew about, invisibly protecting you and all living things on the earth. On the day you were born, the earth turned, the moon pulled, the sun flared, and then with a push, you slipped out of the quiet dark when suddenly you could hear a circle of people singing with voices familiar. "Welcome to the spinning world," the people sang as they washed your new tiny hands. "Welcome to the green earth," the people sang as they wrapped your wet, slippery body. And as they held you close, they whispered in your open, curving ear, "We are so glad you have come." Oh, on the day you were born, by Deborah Fraser. Regardless of the day, I'm glad you were born. You are wonderful. Just wonderful. And I'm so thankful for you. We're celebrating you today. Yes, we celebrate birthdays and we celebrate milestones and we celebrate holidays and we celebrate ceremonies, right? All kinds of cultures have ceremonies to celebrate you. Baptisms, bar and bar mitzvahs, quinceañeras, naming days, graduations, promotions, award ceremonies. But we are celebrating you just because you are you, and we love you. Adela Comes Home. It's produced in partnership with Nikki Peet, her daughter Adela, her mother Teresa, and Quanah Matz. Photographs are by Franny Wilson, and this is a love every book. Adela Comes Home. My name is Adela, and I am coming home. I am Native American from the Coeur d'Alene tribe in Idaho. Native American means that my family has been here for a really, 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 really long time, longer than anyone else. This land where my family is from is my home. My mama is coming with me, and I call her my Nune, which is how you say mother in the Coeur d'Alene tribal language. My grandmother traveled here too. When I see her, I jump into her arms. I call her my Yaya. My favorite part of coming home is being out on the water. I get to ride in a boat called a sturgeon canoe. Canoes like this one have been used by all the people in my family who came before me, my Tsutsutin. For special days like today, I wear clothes called regalia. I'm wearing my regalia right now. This is our traditional patchwork, and all of these are beads. I even have on Hello Kitty beaded earrings. For special days like today, I wear clothes called regalia. We never call it a costume. We never call it an outfit. It's regalia for Indigenous people. My Nune, my Yaya, and I all get dressed together. Nune helps me put on a special dress she made just for me with my Native American name on it. She puts a belt on me, necklaces made with beads, a bag, and special shoes called moccasins. I even get to wear lipstick! Wearing my regalia makes me feel proud. Before we climb into the canoe, we have a ceremony to bless it and welcome us home. We say thank you to the water, to the people who made the canoe, and to those who came before us, my family. To say thank you, we burn a plant called sage to make smoke. Then we use a fan made of feathers to guide the smoke around our bodies and the canoe. This is called smudging. I love smudging. It's like taking a bath with smoke instead of water. It smells good and I feel clean after I do it. My Nune and I have been smudging since I was a baby. We smudge my eyes so I can see the good in everything, my mouth so I can speak kind words, my ears so I can hear good things, and my heart so I can lead with it. We always end by smudging my feet so I can walk a good path. See that her feet have moccasins on them? That's a traditional kind of Indigenous footwear. And they're wearing their regalia, their traditional clothing. After we've smudged ourselves and the boat, we get ready to climb in. I love the water. We call it Sikwe. The water is yours, my Yaya reminds me. It belongs to you, and you belong to it. I climb in carefully between Nune and Yaya, and we push off from the shore together. When I move, the canoe moves, and Nune says, "Be careful, Adela. I know you're excited, but we still need to be safe. It takes courage to be patient and still." I hang on tight. It's so peaceful on the water. "Lim lemsh sikwe," I say. It means, "Thank you, water." How do you say thank you? Yaya starts to sing and play a drum. We always sing when we're on the lake, and she lets me play the drum too. It's time to head back. "Do you want to help?" Nune asks me, and she hands me the paddle. A paddle is a long stick with a wide, flat end that we use to move the canoe through the water. I hold on tight. To paddle, you push back to go forward. This is not where I live, but it feels like home. I'm calm here. "This is your home," Nune says, "because this is where you came from. This land is yours, just like it's mine and Yaya's. One day, this land will belong to your children, too." Adela comes home. "Oh, how wonderful to celebrate you. Celebrate who you are. Celebrate your name. Celebrate everything good about you. Celebrate our love for you. Celebrate your family. Celebrate who you're going to be. Oh, how wonderful to celebrate you today. You are so loved. And our books today, our stories today, remind us of that on the day you were born." And Adela comes home. "We're celebrating you. You are so very wonderful. You are marvelous. You are magnificent. And we love you very, very much. Thank you for reading with me today for story time. We love you, love you, love you.
Oh, thank you so much, Miss Bethany. We loved everything you shared with us and learned so much from you. And now, I'd like to thank all of you who joined us today. I hope you enjoyed Miss Bethany and the special bonus surprise story time with Dr. Dawn. Look forward to being together again for another conversation soon.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.